This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
The Kakadu Plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have a classic episode for you about why we eat three meals a day.
Yes, which is a question I still every now and then catch myself thinking, like, what is going on here?
Yeah, well, because we get into it in the top of the episode, but you still have a very rigid three meals a day system, right?
It is during the pandemic, it has become two meals a day. I don't do breakfast anymore because I'm not running anymore.
Okay.
But yes, I am very much a, like, it is this time, this is the time. otherwise, what am I even doing?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking about this one. It is from April of 2018. And I was thinking about it because when we went on our trip recently, we were, you know, going to the West Coast-ish. And so we were going to Pacific time. We are in Eastern time under normal Atlanta circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so Annie, you kindly made us dinner reservations at 8:30 local time.
Yes.
And we all kind of suddenly realized, like, oh, that's going to be like 11:30 according to our bodies.
Right.
And I was like, great. I snack once every 25 minutes anyway. This is just fine for me. It doesn't really matter when I have dinner. And you were like, the way that you were mentally preparing yourself for it was physically manifesting the way that, like, someone, like, buckles themselves into, like, a helicopter seat. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, we made, I don't know if you noticed, but we didn't have, like, an argument at all, but, like, kind of a discussion about it. Because you were like, let me give you a snack. And I was like, you were bringing logic to something illogical. Like, this is not going to happen. And we made the people behind us laugh. I don't know if you noticed, but
I did. I did. Well, because I don't know if this was on the airplane, and I have no idea if they knew that we knew each other or if, like, I was just randomly inserting myself into your life.
Right. Because we weren't sitting next to each other. We were across the aisle from each other.
Yeah. Because I like let it go for a minute, and then like a few minutes later, I was like, Annie, really, like, you can have these almonds. I have extra. Like, you, I appoint myself Jewish grandmother of the trip. Like, you are allowed to eat. I am giving you permission. And you were like, no, that's how they get you.
Well, then it was interesting because you asked me a follow up question as we landed in Atlanta days later. You asked me, like, but your stray cat, meaning free food, you eat it, but you won't why won't you eat the snacks? And I'm telling you, this is actually a really good illustration of how much I don't like snacks.
It's
competing. Like, I won't, like, in our office, I could have taken a bunch of free snacks, but I didn't. What I wanted was the free food that I could eat as a full meal.
As a full meal.
Even if I didn't want it. Mm-hmm.
That's wild. I love a snack.
It is. you do. And I'm happy for you. Yeah. I just sat up really straight when I said that. I'm very happy for you. Yes.
No, hey, yeah. whatever works for you, I'm happy about that too.
Thank you. I do have a question.
Okay.
Before we get into this, we're doing a classic because we're having some like technical issues, life issues, all kinds of issues. But your birthday is coming up.
Oh, so it is. Huh. I keep forgetting
it
that.
It is. Yes, you told me you keep forgetting it. But I was wondering, do you have like a food that you go to for your birthday other than mustard, which I know we've done?
Like something that I try to obtain for myself on a birthday occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Probably seafood of some kind. It always just feels fancy, and it's some of my favorite stuff to eat. So yeah, like if I can go somewhere that has like a good like sashimi option, or like a good, you know, crudo or scallop situation of some kind, that's usually what I'm going to go for. But yeah, it's more, I feel like birthdays are more like a vibe for me. Since I do, since it does fall over Memorial Day weekend frequently, like in the past, it's always been like a cookout kind of situation. You know, various households and various friends groups and yeah, I don't know, during the pandemic, pandemics are weird. As it turns out, they're strange.
Yes. I will agree with that statement. Yeah.
So I actually don't have plans yet. I'm like, I kind of have plans like the day before, and then I'm just, I don't know, we're going to figure it out. Dates aren't that important to me. It's sort of like, again, it's like a vibe. It's like just like a birthday. Like, I don't know, like I'll get around to it.
I'm all about it. I mean, the same. During the pandemic especially, it's just kind of been like, what?
Been like, I don't know. Sure. Cool.
Yes. Well, soon I hope we can get together and we can maybe chip away at our list and watch some movies.
Yes.
Specials.
Yes. Some holiday specials. Some Evil Deads.
Yes.
You guys, Annie hadn't seen any Evil Dead movies until...
Except the new one. Yep. Which I know is it's a real faux pas for me. So I'm happy about this exchange. I don't think it's quite fair because the holiday special is more terrifying than any of that probably. But I'm very happy about it and I'm excited about it.
I'm psyched to see which is worse because.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
And right. Well, that's the birthday vibe. That's which is worse. With some food. I feel like that's right. Yeah. Yes.
Well,
okay.
on that note, I suppose that we should let former Annie and Lauren take it away.
Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about not a specific food in particular, but rather a system of eating.
A system of eating, yes. Three meals a day.
Why do we do that?
Why? It's, well, there's a lot of reasons why. So in the U.S. and I think most Western countries, it's 3 square meals a day.
That's the rule. That's it.
Yep, that's it. And if, listeners, you have a different eating frequency, please write in and let us know. From what I read online, several countries have 4 meals, the fourth being a smaller mid-afternoon snack.
Mm-hmm. As some kind of tea time almost kind of shtick, sure.
Yeah. Some cultures do a big breakfast, some a big lunch. In the U.S., I would say our big meal is dinner or supper. Mm-hmm. Depending. What word do you use for that?
Dinner. But my family, my mother's side of the family in Ohio would have said dinner for lunch and supper for dinner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh. I think we mostly use dinner, but supper also meant the same thing. You could use either interchangeably. We'll be talking about that.
But you didn't use the word dinner for lunch.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
It meant the same meal. My mom was pretty Southern, and she would say supper.
Oh, goodness.
I'm really bad at a Southern accent, so I'm glad that worked out.
That did. Annie, y'all couldn't see, but Annie just, like, grew this gorgeous, amazing feathered hat as she said that word.
I did. It's one of my many skills. And I got to thinking about this recently when I was anxiously waiting for 6 p.m. because I have strict rules. Lunch is no earlier than noon. And dinner is no earlier than 6 p.m. In fact, people have commented on this in the office because they'll hear my stomach making so much sound, like at 11:30, and they say, well, why don't you come with us and get lunch? And I'm like, nope, gotta wait.
Not until noon.
12 p.m., because otherwise, by the time 6 p.m. comes around, I'm going to be so hungry. But it sounds ridiculous already. This is one of the reasons we're looking into it. Also, I eat 3 meals a day, hungry or not hungry. 3 meals a day. And I started wondering if this was just routine based on my part, on all of our parts, or if there's some general body thing going on where it's like a certain amount of time passes and this is generally when you should be hungry again. So that's kind of why we're talking about this today.
Do you snack in between meals at all? Do you allow yourself snacks?
Oh, never.
Oh,
never.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. No.
Oh, wow.
That is a big forbidden. No snacks. Never.
See, I go about my eating habits I either eat about 2 meals a day, like a lunch and a dinner, with maybe a snack in between, but maybe not. Or I just graze throughout the day.
Like an antelope on a safari.
Yeah, with maybe like a main dinner meal that's more of a social function.
Mm-hmm.
But, note, 3 meals a day was also a South Korean reality TV show about people and guest celebrities using what they could grow, catch, and forage in a small fishing village to make 3 meals a day, 3 days a week.
Oh, fun note.
Yeah. But yeah, we're mostly, it's the first thing that came up when I Googled it. And so I was just like, oh.
Might as well include this.
There you go. But yeah, we're mostly talking today about Europe and North America in this particular episode because, yes, it is fascinating to us how ingrained this concept is.
Yes. And if you stop and think about how many things these meals influence, breakfast, lunch, dinner, it influences weddings, dates, work days.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of bizarre when you think about it.
It's sort of the structure.
Yeah.
Of our days.
It really is. I spend most of my day thinking about the next meal. Is that a good time? A good way to spend your days? I don't know. And while it's been a hard and fast rule, those blasted millennials are moving away from it, which equates to substantial gains in the packaged snack market in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And at 2017, 14.2% of Americans were eating 5 or more snacks a day. And the largest consumer push seems to be high-protein snacks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. More and more people are foregoing breakfast entirely, about 15%. And the snacking industry has excellent corporate terminology, like core snacking, macro snacks, micro snacks. I want to do a whole thing just about this terminology.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
And for the McDonald's fact of the episode, it's been a while, but here's one. After launching all-day breakfast in Canada, largely in response to request of millennial customers, the company released this statement. Canadians want to enjoy breakfast when they want to, without the constraints of time. The attitude was all me. That's just how I read it. If we want fast food breakfast at 10 p.m., then gosh darn it! We're not going to let your rules get in the way. A&W came out with a similar stance in Canada that same year, the president saying, the response was tremendous, particularly from millennials, and we know that breakfast is something Canadians don't limit to just the morning.
I was so excited when so many fast food places started releasing breakfast all day menus.
Yes.
Because I don't go to them very often, but when I do, and it's like 11 o'clock at night.
Sometimes you want a hash brown.
Sometimes you want a hash brown. Man, sometimes you want a hash brown.
Mm-hmm. We've all been there.
Yeah. This is an etymology-heavy episode, which I hope you're as excited about as we are.
Yes.
First up, and as a sort of clue to how things are going to progress here, let's talk about the word meal.
Yes, let's.
Before I dug into this research, I had guessed that the times we eat meals and the ground-up grains meals, your cornmeals, your oatmeals, came from the same root and, like, indicated the importance of these grains to our ancestors' diets.
Makes sense, yeah.
Sure. But they're actually from two totally different root words. The grain meal comes from the Proto-Indo-European root malay, meaning crush or grind. And this meaning has been around sort of forever.
Wow.
The eating time meal didn't come about until the 1200s or so, 1200 CE or so, from the pi root mi, meaning measure, through the Germanic slash Viking slash Frisian word meal, meaning a measure of time or an appointed time. The 1200s are when this began to apply exclusively to first special occasions where you gather and eat, and then to any eating occasion.
And a note from me, when Lauren said pie earlier, it was not about the delicious baked dessert.
Oh, no, that's a abbreviation for Proto-Indo-European.
I'm sure our listeners were probably totally on board and knew that, but I was like, pie? Wow. I didn't know it had such roots in our mealtime.
Yeah, Proto-Indo-European is a language that's lost, but that seems to have branched out into both Germanic and Latin languages.
Yes.
So.
Just wanted to clarify in case there's any pie lovers like me out there that hear pie and stop listening to anything else.
Understandable.
Yes. And this may seem obvious, but this whole meal thing, like three meals a day, is kind of weird and unnatural when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
As we're eating at these specified times instead of when we're hungry. And clarification here is not bored.
Not bored, but actually hungry.
Yes. Stomach growling. I am hungry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Low blood sugar, whole thing. Yeah.
Right. So why do we do it? We'll get into that after a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino food ways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
The short answer of where the three meals a day comes from is a combination of industrialization, marketing, always, convenience, routine, and a touch of racism.
Oh.
Also always,
thanks,
almost.
Thanks, history.
Yeah. But let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we look at breakfast, in the scheme of things, it's relatively new. In ancient Rome, it was tradition to eat one meal a day, typically around lunch. Any more than that, and people thought you were a glutton.
Oh, goodness.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons this midday meal was so big is light, as in daylight, sun.
Ah.
Yeah. Before electricity, people got up earlier to make the most of the daylight. And the work back then was more physical, meaning that by noon, you were probably famished. Sometimes you'd have a snack of bread and cheese called a beaver or a noonshine. But generally, it was this one meal around noontime. That was it.
Yeah. For an added terminology bonus, this middle of the meal day was called dinner, not lunch.
Right.
Or the Latin version of that. But it was technically the first meal of the day. The word dinner is rooted in the Latin for break one's fast, which, forgive my Latin pronunciation, it looks like desjunare.
Yeah.
So dinner originally meant breakfast and was eaten at lunchtime.
I hope you're not confused, because it gets even wilder terminology-wise in a little bit. If we skip ahead to the Middle Ages, religion informed appropriate eating times in Europe. No eating before morning mass, you heathen, and no meat for about half of the year.
Yeah.
Historians think the word breakfast first popped up around this time, meaning break the night's fast. Religion also gave us the full English breakfast, just a little side note. Pre-refrigeration, the day before Lent, you were going to eat up your pork, a lot of people had pigs, and your eggs. Again, no refrigeration, can't tell chickens to stop laying eggs, though in its earliest form, it was probably the English lunch or dinner. Ah.
Although, as a quick side note about eggs, when you don't wash eggs industrially the way that we do here in the United States, you don't have to refrigerate them. We and a few other countries make farms wash eggs, which prevents potential spread of salmonella, but also washes away this protective oil or wax on the egg's shell that would act as a preservative.
Yeah.
That's why people from other countries keep their eggs out, and we look at them like they're weird, and they look at us like we're weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
First time I went to Europe, I was like, what is this?
What is this madness?
I don't understand. Don't they realize all of their eggs are out? But now I know. Now yes. I'm enlightened to the way of the egg. Rich folks of the time had these huge, incredibly over-the-top, lavish dinners, which, again, was still around noontime because artificial light hadn't been invented yet, called cenas.
Around this time, circa the 14th century CE, and with the advent of breakfast, dinner shifted to mean the day's main meal. Still, as in Roman times, it served around midday. Also around then, an evening meal came to be called supper, a loan from the French souper, meaning the same thing and probably coming from the word soupe.
Yeah.
Yeah, meaning broth, which roots from the Germanic sup, meaning to sip.
Oh, and obviously that's where soup probably came from. I say obviously, but who knows? It seems likely that is where it came from.
I believe you're correct.
Yes, but we won't know for sure until we get around to that soup episode.
Ooh.
In the meantime, we're going back to the 17th century. By then, breakfast was pretty commonplace in Europe, especially with the rich who started building breakfast rooms, of course.
Huh.
As we touched on in our brunch episode, hunting parties catapulted breakfast to new heights for the aristocracy. Huge meals, sometimes 24 courses, a lot of it meat.
Yes, a shocking amount of it meat.
Yeah. For the non-wealthy, breakfast typically consisted of leftovers from the previous lunch, dinner, what have you, meal. Mush, bread, cheese, anything that needed to be eaten up. Before the European settlers arrived to the Americas, indigenous peoples ate when they were hungry. The arriving colonists pointed to that as further reason the indigenous peoples were inferior in their minds because they, quote, grazed like animals do.
Oh.
That was the accounting mm-hmm. From an English settler, as opposed to sticking to mealtime boundaries like civilized folk.
Geez, no corsets and no mealtimes. What are these people up to?
They're just living their lives without these boundaries. I don't understand. And though Europeans mocked Native Americans for their eating habits and might snidely call them gluttons, anthropologist of the time, Lewis Morgan, attested that Native Americans ate only about a fifth of what colonists did.
Oh, wow.
So they were eating less, even mm-hmm. though they were eating more frequently. Bonus answer to another question I've always wondered. 1750s colonial Americans widely adopted meat for breakfast, meaning that people generally ate meat at every meal. At the time, two or three meals, depending on whether or not you added in the later in the day snack. Breakfast recipes of the time included fried veal liver, spare ribs, meatloaf, duck, turkey ragu. Meat became such an integral part of the meal that, according to one observer, a breakfast without such an addition is considered as scarcely worth eating.
Ooh.
I've wondered that for a long time. When did it become like a meal is not complete?
Without
meat. Trimes. I think we're moving away from that, but I feel like that was a very big thing for my parents' generation. There was always meat involved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And meat as part of breakfast was an even bigger thing when eating out, especially in the South. One quote I found from an Englishman advised, in stopping for breakfast in the Southern states, you must never calculate on a detention of less than 2 hours, as your entertainers will prepare dishes of meat or poultry for you. And I read another account of a traveler stopping in Kentucky in a tavern, and he was hoping to get a quick breakfast of coffee. He specifically ordered only coffee because it needed to be quick. But at the insistence of the matron, birds were caught, feathers plucked, birds were roasted, ham pan fried, bread baked, and he was there for 2 hours. Times have changed in the U.S., man.
Oh, yeah.
Breakfast is like... whatever run meal.
yeah, whatever you can grab from either your counter or, I guess, like, pilfer from Starbucks on your way into your office.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. It's what you can find and eat while moving.
I will not eat my yogurt with a spoon. I shall only drink it. For it is 2018.
That is what we were promised in this future.
We don't have hoverboards, but we have drinkable yogurt.
I guess it's a kind of a success.
Sort of. Actually, really hate drinkable yogurt.
Yeah, it's not for everyone, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of the future, after the Industrial Revolution and the introduction of the 9-to-5 workday, a midday meal, aka your lunch hour at work, the very beginnings of it, which now had to be a quick, casual, usually handheld thing, and then you had the end of workday meal. At home, and so it was a home-cooked meal with your family, a.k.a. dinner, the family dinner specifically, became the norm.
Ah.
Breakfast before you leave work. This rigid meal schedule traveled with European settlers to the New World, and with the introduction of artificial light, dinner, as in the big midday meal, shifted to later and later in the day, probably after work, after you got home from work. For a while, Sunday held on to the traditional noontime dinner, a.k.a. the precursor to Sunday brunch. And in the U.K., Sunday roast is still a thing, so I hear. As the world urbanized, mass-produced food became a necessity. There wasn't room for everyone to have a garden or their own livestock. Some people didn't even have kitchens. More terminology madness. The word lunch wasn't used at all until the 19th century.
Huh.
It may have come from an old Anglo-Saxon word, nuncheon, which denoted a quick-to-go type snack between meals in the 17th century. Like a sandwich, perhaps. allegedly invented by the Earl of Sandwich in the 1750s so he could eat with one hand. Or it could be derived from nunch, a word that referred to a big chunk of bread in the 16th and 17th century. Either one.
Mysteries.
Yes.
Mysteries of history.
Industrialization increased the amount of wheat in the American diet since it was now easier to produce a higher quality, cheaper product. From 1830 to 1850, the wheat consumption of the average American went up by 20 pounds per year.
Ooh.
Yeah, the meat-to-wheat ratio flipped, and a lot of the sweet breakfast breads we eat now became more popular as a way to start your day. Then, at the beginning of the 20th century, we get John Kellogg. Yes, that John Kellogg. Oh. And cornflakes. Edward Bernays and bacon, as we talked about in the bacon episode. The marketing push for breakfast is the most important meal of the day in the 1920s and 30s to get people to buy more bacon and other breakfast foods. That always makes me think of the quote from Arrested Development. What do I always say is the most important thing? Breakfast. And then he's like, no, family. And George Michael says, oh, I thought you're talking about things that we eat. Anyway, this is just me. breakfast took a hit during World War II. But once the war was over and things like the toaster, sliced bread, and instant coffee became commonplace, breakfast came back in a big way. Another thing about the Industrial Revolution, jobs went from being mostly outdoors, active, physical, to mostly indoors, sedentary. People didn't change their food intake to reflect this change, however, especially when it came to breakfast. Doctors started sounding the alarm in the U.S. after patient complaint of indigestion grew to a really must have been high, high level because it was called a national case of indigestion.
Wow.
And that's when the idea of a lighter breakfast came in, which Kellogg capitalized on.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, it just took off from there. And another thing. We can't leave the television out of the conversation, not only as a way to advertise foods, but as key in perpetuating this idea of the family dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Movies, television, commercials often featured this idea of the family meal. According to the BBC article about this I was reading, the family dinner is on the decline, and this decline began in 1986 with the first microwave meal.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The lighter breakfast thing is still trending, although these days breakfast cereals and other staples like orange juice are trending way down, like 30 to 40% down in the past couple decades.
Oof.
In favor of other carb-based products, supplemented with a heavy dose of protein, like all those breakfast sandwiches and avocado toasts and protein bars and yogurt drinks.
Yep. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much why we have the three meals a day. It's routine and work day, I would say. Industrialization, routine, work day. But we are sort of moving away from it. I have a lot of friends that still only eat. They eat three meals a day no matter what.
No matter what, yeah, yeah. And I've got a lot of friends who alternately have tried all kinds of different diet plans, like specifically because they have they promise weight loss or exercise results based on eating more meals a day but smaller or the intermittent fasting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into a tiny bit of the science of that after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated.
AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport too. Is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, you asked earlier, Annie, if maybe like there was a certain like rhythm in our bodies, like, you know, these 3 times in a day that we're primed to eat.
Yeah, this amount of time passes and this is when you should be hungry.
Well, and it certainly is true that through your digestive system, your food moves about 6 to 8 hour intervals or so. That's about how long it takes for food to pass from your throat through, you know, your butt.
Yeah.
And depending on what you've got going on. And so having meals in about 6 to 8 hour intervals certainly does make a certain amount of sense. But whether or not eating 3 meals a day is good for you is one of those things that, without doing a whole episode's worth of research on, is best summed up as our bodies are complicated and more research needs to be done.
The foodstuff motto.
and y'all, you've been calling for a fasting / ketogenic diet episode, and we hear you. It is on the list. That is not this section right now.
Yes.
Yes.
From what I read throughout the years and also specifically for this episode, kind of like brief overview, it doesn't seem to matter, at least current research suggests, it doesn't seem to matter at all how often you eat. 6 meals a day versus 3 a day of the same calorie count, you're going to see the same results generally.
There is some evidence that eating too close to bedtime, say within an hour or two, will spike your blood sugar and insulin, which can lower your melatonin, which can make it harder to sleep.
Yeah.
But there is extremely weak evidence that breakfast is that most important meal of the day. There are lots of studies that have concluded all kinds of things about breakfast, fighting obesity and risk of heart disease, but reviews of these studies unfortunately show that they've been pretty heavily biased in their interpretations of their data and even misleading in their language about their data, thus like overstating their already kind of shaky conclusions. So, what's going on here?
Ooh.
Would you believe me if I said financial conflicts of interest?
Absolutely not. Could not be. It's got to be something else.
It's never happened in the food industry before.
Perhaps it's aliens? I don't know.
Major breakfast food industry players like Kellogg's and Quaker Oats help fund a lot of these studies. And while a biased funding source does not necessarily mean that the resulting research will be biased, it certainly is something to take into consideration.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't cover the other part of the breakfast debate, whether you need it for good, smart thought power.
Oh, man, my mom was such a believer in that. That's why I loved the big test days, because she would make, like, a big breakfast.
Ooh.
It was the best. Like, bacon and eggs and toast with butter and strawberries cut up.
Man.
And orange juice, a fresh squeeze. It was the best.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, I interrupted your scientific study.
No. That will certainly at least have, like, a psychological effect of, like, I'm willing to get up and go now.
I was pumped. I was like, ooh, CRCT day, breakfast.
back on the science side, the problem with research in this area, because it does tend to, some research does tend to show that, you know, having students eating breakfast leads to better scholastic results.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with research in this area is that a lot of it is done with students and school breakfast programs. And unfortunately, it fails to consider the students' food security at home.
Right.
Because you have to keep in mind that sadly, 12 to 15% of American households are food insecure, meaning that they do not have access to food, enough access to food for all of their household members to live an active and healthy lifestyle. So if you're not considering what kids ate for dinner the previous night or whether they were able to eat dinner at all, you really can't judge the impact that eating breakfast at school has on their academic performance and their weight profile.
Right.
Which brings us to really the main point in the is breakfast healthy? Are three meals a day necessary kind of question, being that if you're hungry in the morning or, you know, if you'll feel dull or sluggish or jittery if you don't eat, you should eat.
Mm.
And furthermore, you should be able to eat, but hunger is a separate episode for sure. I mean, also, you know, be careful with fasting, because fasting when you're hungry can lead to overeating later. So do watch out for that. You could be protecting yourself from overeating later in the day, Annie, with your
very strict
breakfast rule.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like if you're just not hungry in the morning, don't force yourself. And if you're looking for a particular weight or fat change and you're fasting in the morning because of that, and you also really want our take on that, stay tuned.
Yeah.
For another episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one. But basically, pay attention to your body. Not just your cravings, but also how you feel after you eat or do not eat. Keep a journal if you think that'd help. Try to eat some proteins and fruit or vegetables and like bits of fats and grains at all your meals. Or maybe balance those things throughout the day through snacking. Hydrate.
Always.
Good. Always hydrate.
Yeah.
And y'all take care of yourselves, okay?
Yeah, please do. Because you're all lovely.
You are.
It's so that so much of the science or the recommendations we get from these studies, they're just ubiquitous. Like
The
eat breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere. If you want to lose weight, eat breakfast.
Eat breakfast, yeah.
And it's,
it's just really personal is the problem.
Yeah, it really is.
And these studies are frequently small. And like I said earlier, there's frequently various rigorosity issues with them. And so, you know, I know it's a less sexy answer. I know it's so much nicer to just be told, like, do this thing and it will work.
It is.
But it doesn't work for everybody. And so it's actually kind of a good thing in the long run, because I feel like I know I and lots of other people that I know get so frustrated about not being able to achieve whatever body type or result that they're looking for through these things that they're told will work or even are sold to work. And it's not always like that.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's annoying, too, when you have a friend doing one thing and you're doing the same thing and it's not working for you. but that is good. And I personally have used a food journal before and I found it really helpful. So anyway, that is why we have three meals a day.
And a little bit of the science about eating them like that.
Yeah. And we will. There's so much there. We have given ourselves quite the task, but
we
will tackle it.
We shall.
In the future.
Maybe we can get one of those fancy science experts on here about
that one. Yeah, that would be really
That'd be great.
Helpful. That'd be so good.
And that brings us to the end of this classic episode. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed revisiting it. And as always, we love hearing from you, listeners. So if you have any birthday meals, birthday vibes.
Yeah.
Wish Lauren a happy birthday. Yes. Any of those kinds of things. I love when you associate. I have such strong associations with food for events and things. Just let us know. Yes, you can email us at hello@savorpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.